Welcome to The Urban Complex, a system of interrelated, emotion-charged ideas, feelings, memories, and impulses. This name takes the definition and lays out what a listener should expect. A podcast where ideas, feelings, and memories collide, leading towards meaningful change. I'm co-host Chris Richardson. Please enjoy the journey with The Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All opinions by Chris Richardson, Dominic Papa, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Arizona State University or the Arizona Commerce Authority. Any endorsement of or messages from sponsors are solely supporting the production of this podcast. There is no relationship further than podcast purposes with any sponsor unless separately created with another entity.
All right, Dom, another episode. How's it going? Go.
Yeah, it's going well, man. How are you?
Great. Yeah, it's fun, you know, like this time of year in the Valley, it's great weather. We've talked about that before. But like, it's also just different. You just get a sense, at least in America. I know recently we had Ireland on and they don't exactly have all the same things I'll be talking about, but it's just, it's interesting to see. We're talking here at Arizona State about how we get our people coming back to the office. And you and I joke all the time that we'd love to have a beer in person with our guests and do the podcast and do it on the road at events. And it just seems like events are a real possibility on the relatively short-term horizon. It just feels like things are different. I don't know. So I'm excited.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you don't have to tell me. I think Barcelona finally announced that this year's Smart City Expo World Congress, the biggest, largest smart city event in the world, will be held in person in November. It was so massive. All the inner circles, all our guests, we were all talking like, oh, are we all going to go meet up? I think I've been, when it was in person, I went to like the last 4 or 5 years because it's just a great place to meet people, network. I mean, we'll have to take the Urban Complex.
Urban Complex on the road, baby. Yeah. We're going to Barcelona. You heard it here first.
I'm loving it. But I agree. It's exciting to see it come back to life. So hopefully we can keep up this positive trend.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I'm not sure if it's public knowledge. I can't exactly say the name, but a large public company has announced they're going to do their summit here in the Phoenix Valley, especially with ASU. So it's super exciting. That's next April. So again, it's just getting real. And hopefully this means that, we don't take a step backwards before we take a step forwards. It's just exciting time. So So tell us who do we have today? Who's our guest?
Oh yeah, a good friend of mine, Mike Grisby. I met him. Oh man, I can't even count the number of years ago I met him traveling on the Smart City Circuit. I think at the time he was working for Cisco. I don't think I met him before during his Kansas City days, but just you're going to see just a real passionate guy. I believe he has a public safety background. I think he came from somewhere in the police department. But you're just going to tell right away. He's got a very strong passion for this. And I remember us, anytime we were at an event, we would purposely try to find each other out so we could have a beer and just chat about what we were doing. He was always supportive of what we've been doing in Arizona, believed in the cause around getting people together to collaborate to make more of an impact in the smart city, smart region space. So I really think you're going to like him. Very, very good guy. He's up at the city of Sioux Falls now and just really making an impact there. So excited to have him on because he went public to private, and now he's back to public. So it'll be interesting to hear the story.
Yeah, super cool. I don't know him well. We did bump elbows, I believe, at the Meeting of the Minds event that we held here in Phoenix I can't remember. It'd be exciting to see him. So should we get him on?
Yeah, let's get him on.
Let's do it.
Yep. Mike, good to see you, my friend. Thanks for joining us on the Urban Complex.
Good to see you.
Yeah, great to have you here. Hey, so let's just jump right in, Mike. Why don't you start with a brief story on your background? You know, what do you want our podcast audience to know about where you came from? We can talk about your role with the city of Sioux Falls soon, but let's focus on now on your prior journey. Talk to us a little bit about your story.
Man, there's so much to unpack, but I think what's really pertinent, and I said this a few years ago, I was actually spoke at a conference and I told the audience, I said, you have to stop thinking about your job and start focusing on your work. And the work is what gets you out of the bed in the morning. It's what motivates you, what lights you up. And you can have all kinds of different jobs and titles and things like that. And so I did this exercise for myself a few years ago. And my work is to be able to help people and organizations get out of their own way so they can maximize their potential. And everything that I've done, certainly over the last 10 years, but everything I've done just falls right underneath that. And I love leaning in with people, leaning in with organizations, leaning in with causes to say, what do you want to accomplish? And then let's walk that back into an actionable plan. So, you know, I've had great opportunity. I served as a police officer, served as the chief information officer for a police department, large metropolitan police department. I worked for a transportation authority. I got to play a global role with a large computing company to build smart cities. And I'll tell you, it has been the idea of a smart city is probably the biggest thing that I have found in the last 20 years that's really lit me up, just from the opportunities that means and the impact that has for Joe and Jill Q Citizen, as well as anybody else in that space.
When you say it, you light up. So that's exciting. Can't wait to hear more.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think it's that's an awesome kind of segue to what we're going to talk about next, because from so far, the guests we've interviewed, a lot of the kind of leading smart city directors have had this interesting background of public, private, different roles, different opportunities. So I'm excited to see how this has transitioned into your role as a director of innovation and technology. But before we jump into the role, tell us a little bit about the city, population, location for our audience.
So I am in South Dakota, which maybe the audience doesn't know is a state within the 50 contiguous states of the U.S.
Where?
just point your compass north and keep going. So I am actually in the city of Sioux Falls, South Dakota, which is the largest city in the state. So the population is about 200,000. The total MSA, Metropolitan Service Area, is 260,000. So we definitely have the lion's share of what's going on in the metropolitan area. It's in the southeast area of the state. So it's very close to Iowa, very close to Minnesota. And you start to get this kind of regional tri-state impact of what's going on within the region. And, some of the key industries that are going on here is we have a historical financial industry here. A lot of the credit cards, first credit cards were processed here. A lot of that processing still happens here. Healthcare is huge here. Ag tech is a growing field, emerging field here. And education is coming up as another emerging large space employer and certainly an industry to be looked at within Sioux Falls.
That's awesome. So let's jump into your role. I know when you got hired, you messaged me and told me how excited you were. So talk to us about this role of the Director of Innovation and Technology. What are you trying to achieve in that role?
Yeah. So it's interesting, Dom, because when, so many different cities have innovation officers or innovation directors or things like that, and it looks different in almost every city. So to kind of just talk about what I oversee is I oversee information technology, the Office of Innovation, communications, data analysis, and then digital services. And so all of that falls under the umbrella of my department. And, one of the things that's really interesting is prior to joining here, I worked in private sector, and I was building smart cities all over the U.S. and was working on that and working with leaders internationally and so forth. And one of the things that I learned is that there are few cities in the U.S. that are gaining as much ground in that smart city comprehensive footprint as we were seeing overseas. And I literally wanted to step out of private sector, go back into the public sector, because one of the things that I don't want to say is missing, but one of the things that is definitely on the lower side is the number of people within the public sector, within these city municipalities that really have an idea and a comprehensive idea of what a smart city is. How should you lean in? What are the real opportunities? What are the real impacts? What are the real challenges? And it's quite frankly, that's one of the reasons why it's so challenging. And, for so many years, and I know both of you know this, is that for so many years, industry led it and it was all focused around technology. And that's not a bad thing, but it's also not the only thing. And so being able to look at this and see what the real impacts are going to be for the citizens and residents, we've got to build everything around that. So that's what I looked at and saw. Sioux Falls is an incredible, incredible community. It's small enough, you can wrap your arms around it, but it's big enough that it's going to have meaningful impact when we do those projects. And strongly positioned financially, strong leadership in the administration, and a tremendous appetite within the community to get something done. And I mean, that's like a perfect storm.
Right. You barely get all those together in one. That's great. So
right.
congrats on being there. We're excited to see what you do. But so let me just double click on something you said there. So your department is literally kind of very, I guess, holistic IT innovation, communication. That's so incredible to me, because what we've heard in the past or our past guests is this idea of don't just put your smart city program nestled within IT and just leave it there, or nestled within economic development and leave it there, because it's very hard then to work horizontally across the organization. So with all those kind of functions within just one department, to me, that's fascinating. It kind of gives you that horizontal purview, because I'm guessing you're doing communication, not just for IT, but you're doing communication
across the board.
Yep, exactly. So right. To me, that seems like a very interesting structure. What else have you seen the benefits of that? I mean, do you get that natural buy-in when you're going to different department directors about a new program?
So it is interesting, because at the director level, and I'll say this from just with my colleagues, I have not experienced a city with as collegial a leadership team as this. I mean, everybody is really leaned in. Everybody is bought in at the director level. Where the challenges were is, how do you get that message? How do you propagate that message down across the rest of the organization? Because at some level, somebody is just focused in on the widget that they're making, or the business that they're doing, or the transaction that they're doing, right? And to help them understand what that means to the bigger picture, that has been one of the biggest challenges that we've mm-hmm. done. And so now with communications inside this department, one of the things that I'm trying to tackle right now with my team is to build out those communication standards, those brand standards that say, here's how we're going to do messaging. Here's how we're going to bring everything, kind of a one team, one vision, one voice aspect to what the city is doing. And I think every community could agree to this, is that there are a lot of great things going on in every community, but does the average resident know how to tie it in? Do they know how to tie economic development into the new park, into the new development, into the new housing area, into the new water rec plant? And they don't know how to do that. And quite frankly, some of them, they just don't want to. They're just thinking about how do I go to work and how do I get my kids to school, right? Mm-hmm. But if we miss the bigger picture of that, then we don't know where we can lean in, and then citizen engagement goes way down, right?
Where do you report in, Mike? Like, are you?
Sorry, again, say it again, Chris.
Where do you report in the city?
So I report directly to the mayor.
That's what I saw from the announcement, which is really incredible. If you think about it, innovation, IT, geographical information systems, and then the communication and marketing. It's a really interesting structure. I was looking at the announcement when the mayor landed. Plus, I think it must be interesting. You report to a mayor that actually ran a digital marketing agency before that. Tell us about that. I mean,
yeah.
Not only are you reporting directly to him in this kind of unique role that we don't normally see in cities, but like, he also knows a thing or two about communication marketing.
I think what's really even more interesting in that dynamic is just his leadership position, right? He has all of that background, and he can jump into the mix of those conversations, but he knows. He's allowing me to move forward and start to have those conversations, and then just bolsters where he needs to, so that I don't have to spend extra time trying to explain and unpack why this is important, why we need to be going down this direction, why we need to be thinking 17 steps ahead. You know, for example, we have one of the things I did when I first came into this position, I sat down with our public works director and I said, open up your project book, because We went out 100 years. Now, they don't have an actual project, but they know life cycle wise, this has to be replaced in 100 years. We looked at 100 years to say, how are we going to start sequencing all of these things? And if we have that much runway on all this, nothing should catch us by surprise. Right?
Yeah. And you didn't go into specifics in your background, but you were referencing a industry company. So you were with Cisco, if I believe, right? Which was right. the the internet of everything. They were kind of really pushing this. You were there. And then I also saw you were at Kansas City. So you probably know Bob Bennett, who is a big proponent. So you really have some experience here. Tell us a little bit about, you can weave in that experience or not, but either way, with this big picture of smart cities from all your experience, tell us about how difficult it was to launch a smart city initiative in the middle of COVID in a new city as you got up to speed.
You know, I think I took a lot of lessons from Kansas City. So Bob and I always say Bob and I were partners in crime in the middle of that. And we had a lot of fun. It was a lot of learning that was going on, and we were kind of making this up as we went. And what was really interesting was Kansas City had an opportunity to lean into what I call shovel ready projects, right? Mm-hmm. We capitalized on those shovel ready projects. We leveraged them with incremental growth on a funding side. And then that laid the foundation for the footprint that we put in for our smart city corridor. Fast forward into COVID and what we're doing here in Sioux Falls, what COVID did is, and you all know this, how important this is for any smart city build out or endeavor, you've got to have your infrastructure in place. You've got to build those foundational components, but that's unsexy talk. That's unsexy work. And everybody wants stuff above ground and nobody wants to talk about the stuff underground. What COVID did was it slowed the pitch down enough that we could actually capitalize and take a look at that foundational, those infrastructure components. And now, even on the backside, you look at American Rescue Plan with this tremendous infrastructure investment. Now we've got these things identified, and it's almost like just laying pipe after pipe after pipe. And
it's really interesting. You have the GIS side of your scope too, because you need that. You need good data stored in ways that the whole city can work with. And then you have to have the plan. This makes a lot of sense. So let's take that a little further for our audience. You know, a lot of mayors, city managers, CIOs, CTOs, resiliency officers. How would you advise to them where, you know, high level of what you've learned, how should they be thinking about their smart city plan and integrating it with the community? Tell us about your approach to that.
You have to think in terms of both and, not either or. Hmm. And what I mean by that is you need to really put and almost script a plan of what you're going to do on your infrastructure and your foundational components. And you have to do that, get that unsexy work done while you can find some low-hanging fruit that the community can actually understand. You know, find something where the community can latch onto and start to metabolize the change of mindset, the change of how they're interacting and engaging with technologies that are soon to be emergent. I mean, they are not emergent, but soon to be prolific, right? The way that we're consuming content now is just completely changed than it was 10 years ago. So you have to be ready for this in ways that most municipalities are not thinking about. It's not that they're not thinking about it. They're not prepared for it. And it just, some of this has caught us by surprise, but even in some of the larger cities, Los Angeles, Austin, like these challenges are real. Dallas, I had a phone call just the other day talking about Dallas, and these
are
real, right? But you can't shirk the dirty work.
Yeah, exactly.
That's my new phrase. You can't shirk.
Can you give an example of both the dirty work that you're doing in Sioux Falls, as well as maybe one of the innovation low hanging fruit things, just to give our audience that specific perspective?
So when I came on board, I had a GIS team that had been in place for a long time. I've got 9 individuals in that shop. They had done the work to catalog all of the fiber in the city. And that's dirty work. You guys know this, right? Somebody has to sit there and catalog every bit of
it. Oh, yeah. It's not like people are signing up for.
I almost got a tear when they told me that. It's like, we already have all our fiber there. I know who owns it. I know where it is. I know when it was last laid. I know who's responsible for it. I have all of that inside of our asset management system. In addition to that, the Parks and Rec went out and cataloged every tree that the city owns.
Oh, wow.
So we have all of this inventory, and it's now in our asset management as layers that we can turn on and off and get. Like, that's dirty work. Somebody had to go out and count every one of those trees and put the geo information on all of that and the fiber. But we now have that, and it's just an easy job to maintain it. Now flip to what's going to be exciting. We're still in the approval process on this, and we're getting some pitches together, but we have, we're going to be putting in a park in very near one of our city attractions. And the park is an opportunity for us to kind of create a living lab and a kind of a proof of concept for people to go in and interact with technologies. We're looking at kinetic sidewalks. We're looking at interactive kiosks. We're looking at, you know, cameras and LIDAR. We're looking at Wi-Fi. We're looking at, you know, things along those lines to go into the park where people can see this in a really, really benign way and in a fun and interactive way to engage with those technologies, to engage with that in a way that as we start to roll this out across the rest of the city, they're going to go, oh, I had a great experience with that. I'm for that. Oh, you're going to roll this out here. The traffic lights are showing me how to do this. And that's, we're trying to get that in this kind of spoonful.
Plus, once you have some of those digital interfaces, you can start to tell the story of those physical assets absolutely in that digital way too. So they kind of compound on each other. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I mean, I think this is fascinating. It seems like you just have this like perfect all-star team, which, because so many times, Mike, as we used to talk in the past, you know, we walk into a mayor's office and they want all the bells and whistles. How are we going to get flying taxis? We're going to be a city. And we're like, okay, do you know where fiber is to connect that, for, you know, ubiquitous Wi-Fi you want? No idea. No. It's like, you have to, yes, we can work towards that big, you know, shiny, sexy object, but we have to do the unsexy work too. And all this groundwork. And I think to your point of having shovel ready projects, because now what we're seeing is with the federal funding that's coming down, they're looking for shovel ready projects. And so, yes, maybe they would fund ubiquitous Wi-Fi, but if your city doesn't know where the fiber is to connect and, you know, and deploy ubiquitous Wi-Fi, you're not shovel ready. You're going to have to go do the studies. And so you're going to be passed over. Right. And so I think it's a huge learning lesson.
To that point is, you know, if your CIO, your chief innovation officer is not leaning in on the economic development side, is not leaning in on the public work side, is not, those projects are going to get stood up without thinking about the technology component to it. Yes, we might put normal connectivity to it, but we're not thinking about the bigger aspect of that and how it could do. You know, we've got a logistics park, and we're thinking about as that grows and develops and evolves, how do we light that up with future technology? I don't like the word future proofing, but how do we certainly look ahead and kind of oversize that for where we're headed? So those are the kinds of opportunities that you have.
Yeah. I think it's just awesome, the work you're doing and the team you have. I mean, congrats on all your success. Yeah. It sounds like it's been a fun journey.
It is. And we're just getting started. I told the mayor when I first came on board, I said, I need 2, maybe even 3 years of no bell ringing work. We gotta do the dirty work. We're not going to be on. We're not going to get the GovTech article. We're not going to get the right. But we've got work to do. And then once we do that, then we can talk about all the bell ringing stuff. And, you know, right now we're having conversations now. The ARP, the rescue plan, is accelerating some of those conversations because we get to talk about infrastructure in a very, very different way. But we still have to do the dirty work.
That's awesome. So after this whole journey, what is your view on smart cities?
I think we've talked about it in so many different ways over the years. To me, a smart city is an engaged community. And what I mean by engaged, we just did, I oversee our digital equity task force. And so we did some work this past summer and did some data collection, and just the education and awareness deficit around what that means, why it's important, and what that means for the future of the city. That is a deficit that we have to overcome, and we got to overcome that almost like post haste. We've got to get that done, because we think it's about somebody playing games or getting access to social media, when it's really about quality of life. It's about access to medicine. It's about access to employment. It's about workforce readiness and preparation. So a smart and connected community, to me, is an engaged community. And if you don't have engagement within the bulk of your citizenry, then you're missing a tremendous opportunity to leverage your own resources. I mean, how many times do we say this is like, the smallest percentage of the community is who's driving the community. It's like, we got to pull in more people into this, because we may be missing some of the greatest ideas, some of the greatest resources, and we just simply don't know.
I love that. I think that's a fabulous perception of smart cities. So Mike, maybe before we get to our last question, I want to give you a little shout out. You're not only, you have this role in the city, but you're also an entrepreneur and kind of hustling on the side as well. Talk to us a little bit about your side hustle and tell the audience what else you're working on.
So last year, I launched an initiative called First Life, and it was around the impact, the positive impact that law enforcement and more than law enforcement, but first responders are having within their communities. I know we have so many terrible stories that are going on right now and so many tragedies that our communities are trying to overcome and really wrap their arms around. But there are so many more positive stories and positive impacts that our first responder community is having. So I launched a Kickstarter campaign last year to get it rolling. Missed my funding on that, but we're regrouping and we took some, we made some pivots and we're going to relaunch in September again this year. Super excited because not only is it to recognize the positive work that the first responders are doing, but it's a way for the first responders to establish different and stronger relationships within the community awesome. Outside of the uniform. If that's the only time that I get to interact with you, I have a very shallow view of what first responders and public safety means. If I get to get exposure to you in all kinds of different ways, then I build kind of different neural networks and neural pathways, and my relationship is way, way, way stronger. And we're going to need to leverage those both from the community side and the first responder side in bad times or in tough times. So
I'm excited. So is it a product or a service that you're envisioning?
It's lifestyle apparel. So the idea behind it is to create an emblem that people can recognize to say, not only am I on this side as a first responder, but I support this side. And I support, more importantly, making my community safe. It's not just public safety folks that are responsible for it. It's every citizen. So how do we have this rallying cry around a symbol that says all of us are focused in on making our community safe and we can engage and lean in together?
That's brilliant.
From a couple of guys that know a side hustle or two, that's what the whole urban complex is. Good luck. It sounds exciting.
So Mike, anywhere we can direct our audience now, or should they wait and hold off until you relaunch?
Yeah, we need to wait until the relaunch because everything's under construction right now.
No worries. We'll be ready.
I appreciate the shout out, though.
No worries. We'll promote when it relaunches. We'll be sure to promote it.
Yeah, it's super exciting.
We'll wrap up. We have a couple of questions, standard questions. So is there anyone along the way that you can't do this alone, that you want to call out in appreciation that's kind of helped you in getting where you are or influenced as a mentor, something like that? Love to hear.
I have to give a shout out to my wife. She has been there in the midst of all the craziness. I told her the other day, I said, I feel kind of like, I'm Jack in the Beanstalk and you're the mom that's telling me how stupid I am for buying into magic beans. Being able to see a vision and holding a vision and not turning loose of it, you have to have people in your corner that one won't totally think you're crazy. So the other one, my boss at the Kansas City Transportation Authority, Robbie Mackinnon, a gentleman who is a personality when he walks into the room and just you get lit up within 5 minutes of talking to him and you don't even know what you want to do, but you're ready to go do it right now. And I love his vision. I love how he sees people. He sees transportation as more than just buses. It is a true community, the central nervous system of a community. So he was very, very instrumental in just helping me see a bigger vision for what smart cities could be.
That's awesome. Super cool. We also like to ask our guests, because they usually know other people that people in this industry want to hear from. Is there anyone you think, as you learn about the urban complex and about what we're trying to do here with these stories, anyone we should have on the show?
You already mentioned Bob Bennett. If you haven't gotten Bob, you got to get Bob on there. Michael Pegues out of Aurora, Illinois. Mike's doing some incredible stuff there. I told him that I'm about 7 months behind him. So
I love it.
He's got to keep running over him. But Jen Sanders down in Dallas, just some great ones. Matt Arvey down in Phoenix in your neck of the woods. Yep. Matt's doing some great stuff down there too. So those are some right off the top of my head.
Awesome. Awesome, Mike. Well, we appreciate it. I know I can speak for Chris on this. It's been a lot of fun. Man, your story is incredible. Keep up the amazing work in Sioux Falls. We're looking forward to following what you're doing. And like you said, maybe, you know, if you're in Phoenix sometime soon, we'll do an urban podcast catch up with you. And maybe we can do it in person this time.
I would love it.
You're awesome. Thank you so much. Appreciate you having you on the show.
No,
thanks.
Appreciate it, guys.
Talk soon. Bye. All right, Chris, Mike Grigsby, what'd you think?
Wow, he knows his stuff. It's funny when you open the door for him to tell about his background, you'd think he'd be all over talking about Cisco and that he was there from the beginning with the internet and everything. You'd think he'd be highlighting he worked with Kansas City and Bob Bennett, you know, the godfather of smart cities. So he definitely knows his stuff. To me, it just starts with what he was brought in to do. You know, I think it's really interesting. You love the organizational side of things. I'm sure you'll get into that later. But the fact of what he's been asked to do, we probably haven't seen this scope under one individual ever from the show. So what was the scope? Innovation, IT, geographical information systems, and communications and marketing. What a mix of scope. And I think it's really important because you need to be able to tell the story. You need to be able to tie the innovation to the outcomes. You want to start with IT. I thought it was pretty impressive what he does.
Yeah, I love it. I think it resonates with our former guests. While there might not be one concrete way to run a smart city program, what we've realized through all the guests is don't bury it within one department with one focus, right? It's got to be expansive and horizontal. You're exactly right. Good point.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that he kept coming back to was the fact of you got to do the non-sexy infrastructure stuff, and then you can get the rights to do the work of the fun stuff that's going to relate to the citizen. And it almost like he has fun with the non-sexy stuff too. So it's not about necessarily the fun. And so I just kept thinking about that as he was sharing. And so if you don't have the plumbing, if you don't have the data, if you don't have the asset management, if you don't have the tools, how are you, you know, if you don't have the connectivity, how are you going to compete? How are you going to be there when the time is right? At the same time, like you got to have things. If you just hide in that world, no one's going to think you're relevant either. And so his approach is find the right opportunity, get something out there, tackle the thing that the city government cares about, that the citizens care about. And I don't know, if you put the right mix, you change the game. So I don't know. Those were the two things that jumped out to me.
Yeah, just hit on the last part. I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, I think it's a leadership, some great leadership advice from him. You know, if you're not willing to roll up your sleeves and get down in the trenches and do the unsexy stuff, your team will never believe that you believe in them or that you're one of them, right? If you just hang out all day with the mayor writing press releases, your team's never going to follow you.
However, and invest in the unsexy stuff, right? Not necessarily you have to be doing it, but you have to make sure it's prioritized because you see the big picture of why it's important. I mean, that GIS story he told was really, really cool. You're a great point.
But if you hang out in only the unsexy stuff and you don't give the mayor something to hang his hat on, you're never going to get anything done because
right.
you won't have the political leadership.
You're irrelevant, right? Because if they don't talk about you at the council meetings or with the team meetings, like, well, then how do you get the buy-in from your peers to make stuff happen?
Totally, great points. The two things that I kind of picked up that I thought was very interesting, you know, especially in the technical world, with the outside smart cities, everyone talks about we need to develop standards for smart cities, standards for IoT, standards for, you know, broadband, et cetera, et cetera. I've never actually heard about internal standards. How do we ensure that we've developed internal communication standards so that way if I'm the IT department and I'm talking about smart cities, the economic development department director is also talking the same way about smart cities. I see that as almost sometimes the number one fatal flaw in organizations is everyone has their own opinion or their own mindset about what smart city means. And you just run into conflicts.
Or their own way of getting the message out that actually takes away from the core message, right? Yeah, no, I think it's a great point. Yeah.
And the citizen's confused because I'm hearing this from this department, yeah. and this from this department. What are we? What are we trying to do? So I thought standards for internal communication was very interesting. I think great piece of advice And the second one that I thought was awesome is because we hit on it in Cracks in the Pavement, I think a couple weeks ago, around this idea of executives needing to, or leaders needing to be digital literate, I believe it was, have digital, you know, be a digital champion. And so here is a mayor who has this background in tech and in digital marketing, understanding enough of the digital aspect to understand it, to grasp it. So that way Mike doesn't have to sell every time the reason why he's doing it. He understands, just give me this much, right? He doesn't have to start from, well, this is how digital X works, right? This is the point of doing a or asset inventory, right? He doesn't have to start there because the mayor had, you know, just enough digital literacy education.
Well, it's not even just enough. I mean, he ran a digital agency. You look on their website, I was stunned. Like, everything's a video, everything's a short clip. It probably ties into the social. They probably get a lot of feed in Sioux Falls. Yeah, no, I think it's important. And he literally reports to him. So yeah. Like, how often have we found that these folks don't report to first of all, at best, they report to the city manager. And then, so you have no idea, but like literally this role with this very broad, diverse set of scope reports to the mayor. That's got to be a huge, huge signal to the executive team, hey, pay attention. This is important stuff. So then those standards actually get used by others, not just stay in a vacuum either.
Yeah, I think awesome. You know, it was exciting to see Mike again, happy that he's happy in his role. And I'm glad we were able to bring him on and tell his story. I thought it was a lot of fun. So let's see. Oh yeah, Cracks in the Pavement. What do you got for us this week?
Well, before I jump in, I'm excited because we've announced sponsors of the overall urban complex in past episodes, but I'm excited because we've got interested sponsors about to come to the forefront to sponsor this section. So clearly what we're doing is working. And so again, call to action. Any of you listening, please let us know, throw it on social, let us know what questions you have. I'm fine keeping doing it because we find some fun stuff that we care about talking about. But you guys know the cracks as well, I'm sure, better than we do. So
I love it. We've got sponsoring bringing us their cracks. I love it. Sponsors.
I try to tell people stay no to crack, but yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah, bring us, like, if you have an idea for that, sponsors, bring it to us. We love it.
Yeah. Right, so cracks in the pavement, though. It's been fun. We've been having a lot of play on this words. But here's one that actually brings it home to the Phoenix Valley too, because we have this issue. And I think it's only going to get worse. You see in the news about how home prices are just going crazy. There's just not enough inventory. You also see rents going through the roof for the same sorts of reasons. Well, that gentrification and those out of whack prices actually lead to people falling through the cracks, unfortunately, in homelessness. So I just saw something where California launched its first ever statewide homelessness data repository. I mean, how amazing. I mean, California, its economy is like the sixth largest economy of any country in the world. So that's a massive place. So imagine if they had full view of everything going on statewide, of who's been in a shelter, who might be at risk, who needs some training. I don't know. I just think it's a really interesting approach that they're taking. And while it isn't going to happen overnight, it's a great, bold ambition.
Completely. You know, that's a very interesting topic because I've seen it firsthand here. I remember when, you know, we first started the nonprofit and got moving on our, you know, smart city journey, we'd go talk to the mayors and they would say, please, please, please don't start with homelessness. It's such an impossible thing to solve. So many nonprofits come to us trying to solve that and it ends up just completely failing. But I think that's because that was, you know, years ago when we weren't really focused around data or making data-driven decisions. Yeah. So I think now that we've not only have capabilities like an AWS in the Cloud Innovation Center, being able to leverage their, you know, expertise in the area, but combining with, oh, now we actually have all this data and how to integrate data across departments or across organizations. Yeah, I think we might be hopefully at a turning point to actually make, you know, some cracks in this impossible issue.
Or at least fill them, right? But you referenced the ASU Smart City Cloud Innovation Center, that partnership with Amazon Web Services. Like, we actually worked with the city of Phoenix's nonprofit that actually runs a homeless shelter. It's kind of the hub for Phoenix. And it was really interesting to see how they were having a hard time with data and understanding where the beds were and who was in them and what was available. And so, you know, I think what California is doing is very noble. So if you can surface that to the forefront, you can make better decisions, you can invest better. And frankly, with so much change and so quick, if we don't get ahead, especially in places like Maricopa County, like we're growing like gangbusters, you yeah. know, unfortunately, people are being left behind. And so it makes a lot of sense. And I don't know, this one just resonated to me. So
yeah, good points. I mean, ultimately, we hope the goal is California builds the model and we don't need to all create it ourselves. Let's replicate, let's pivot, as Mark Wittenberg from Tempe would say, pivot, adjust it, and then deploy it. So,
well, who knows? Maybe they heard about our kick and maybe they stole our idea.
Very true.
I'm just kidding.
Awesome.
Cool. All right. Well, that is a wrap on the complex. Thanks everyone for joining us. It's a great show.
Yeah. Great to see you this week. See ya.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to The Urban Complex, smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow. Please find us on where you listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. We do love your feedback. Let us know if you have ideas for guests or questions to air on Cracks in the Pavement via social media. The Urban Complex is found on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Or just shoot me an email, chris@theurbancomplex.com. Till next time.